I was like, I'm not talking about Noster anymore with anyone.
Don't do that again. The AI goes, okay.
These type of people are very, very rare.
Personal computers without AI are not personal computers. They're communism computers.
It would be very easy for Madeira to become a destination spot for Bitcoiners.
And they are very anti-Bitcoin.
You're listening to Flirting with Bitcoin, a weekly chat with my very interesting husband about Bitcoin and how the world and our family's life is better because of it.
It's season 4 and we've moved to Noster City.
So my Bitcoin lessons are done?
Your Bitcoin lessons are never done.
So what does new social media have to do with it?
Babe, Noster is more than social media. If Bitcoin is the new money, Noster is the new internet.
You really think so?
I do. I believe Noster will drive the next wave of Bitcoin adoption. So Noster City is where we need to be.
We?
Yeah, of course we're bringing Keon. You got your bags packed, buddy?
Yes.
Good job. Don't forget to pack your NPub.
Let's go. Hey, Ian.
Hey, Mandana.
I'm going to try really hard, but I think this episode is going to be about AI. And I feel like if someone isn't, you know, into AI right now, they're going to be like, oh, God. But it's worth talking about.
Okay.
Like after 6 weeks here, participating in the Sovereign Engineering Program with, I think, like some of the smartest people I've ever had the pleasure of working alongside, I feel caught up. I feel like it was something that I wasn't paying attention to at all. It was something that I was a bit dismissive about, but now it's all I can think about. And I think it's all that all of the engineers that were participating in the program are also thinking about.
Yeah, it became a very big focal point literally after like the first week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was the plan, but one of the guys here showed off some stuff and I think it just like sparked everyone to be like, oh, I could do something. And then 6 weeks later, it's like, we can write the world.
Yeah, we can fix the money, fix the world with AI.
We can prompt the world, yeah. We can prompt the world.
But before we get into it, babe, what time is it?
The current time is 892224, and we are approximately 2,126 blocks since our last recording.
And if I give you one U.S. dollar, how many acres could I get on sunny Bitcoin Island?
Today, you could get 1,186 acres, aka Satoshis, on sunny Bitcoin Island.
Yeah. And now every time I hear sunny Bitcoin Island, I think Madeira.
It's one of the many.
It's really beautiful. If you have not seen what Madeira looks like, pull up my Noster profile and look at the Good Morning post that I posted Sunday this week, because this episode should go out this week. You'll get a taste of what I'm talking about. This place is just gorgeous. And I don't even know what we think when we picture an island, but this is what you should picture when you're thinking an island. And hey, there are over 100 businesses that accept Bitcoin. There are more people moving here who are Bitcoiners. There are people that just finished out this cohort that have made the decision to move here. This might very well be Bitcoin Island one day.
The businesses are what really make it possible, right? So a lot of people have Bitcoin and it's like, what do I do with it once I have it? And there's a lot of people that think you can't spend it. And then you come somewhere like this. And like I said, in our last episode, I walked into a random coffee shop to just like get a snack. And I see like Bitcoin accepted on the register and you just don't expect that anywhere else. So for Bitcoiners, that's very rare, but it because of the condensedness of the island, you can basically say like, I can do most things here with Bitcoin, which is pretty interesting. And if there aren't businesses that'll take your Bitcoin to do it, there are Bitcoiners here that can take your Bitcoin to do things for you, right? That's the other thing is that when you have Bitcoiners around, their skills become purchasable with Bitcoin.
Yeah. I think an important thing to tie in with that is, and this is something we talk about a lot, is that being a Bitcoiner is a very lonely experience. Often no one in your real life, no one that you have like real person-to-person relationships with understands Bitcoin. And then you throw Noster on top of that and like, okay, that's even then, right? You're not going to get that connection. And then if you are a developer in this space, who on earth are you talking to? And whatever bucket of that you fall into, if you find out that, oh, there's a place where I can come and there's going to be like-minded people that I can just have, you know, intellectual conversations with where they can like help me further expand on ideas that I have, or I can just live off of my Bitcoin, or they see, you know, even the social media effect, you see people that are traveling to Madeira, either for sovereign engineering or for other reasons. I think that in a couple of years, this is going to be the spot that Bitcoiners just vacation.
As long as the European Union doesn't muck it up.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Like, we're technically still in the Eurozone.
Yeah,
and
we absolutely are.
Very anti-Bitcoin.
They are. But so, I feel like the crew here is going to find a way to make it work.
Well, no, Madeira works because it's got a little bit of sovereignty mm-hmm. away from Portugal. And so Portugal is not a major country in the EU. So it's kind of like whatever the Portuguese are doing, so be it. But if things start going well here, I could see how the European Union might step in and be the European yeah. Union that we know they are.
But then I think like, okay, the first wave of Bitcoiners who became, you can say wealthy, financially stable, however you want to describe it off of Bitcoin, they've, I think, figured out where they want to live, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have another wave of Bitcoin adopters who might feel really financially stable with the savings that they have, but they're not rolling in it. And I think those people who aren't happy with where they live, they're not happy with their government, they're just shopping around, right? They're jumping from Bitcoin conference, event, Noster event, just getting a taste and feel of different places. And you know, we've gone to a couple of these. We went to Amsterdam. We went to El Salvador twice last year. Now we've been here. And the people that I interact with are looking to move somewhere. They don't want to live where they live. And so that's where I think, like, it's coming. It's happening. You're seeing, you hear it at cohort after cohort. People are like, yeah, I'll move here. Why not? It's really amazing. And I think it falls in line with just the way that Bitcoiners in general are. They're bold, they try new things, but they're logical and they're reasonable and they're rational. And yeah, and just talking at length with the people that had already made the decision to move here, have lived here for a while, it's just fascinating. They seem very happy. They seem very confident in the choices that they've made. But really, if anything, like, people want to always go and explore new places. And I just think that it would be very easy for Madeira to become a destination spot for Bitcoiners and Nostriches too, to then find a way to meet each other in person and connect and have more productive conversations, collaborations on how to grow Nostr, which is really what I want to talk about today, because it's something that I've been thinking about, you know, for the past year when Nostr clicked for me. And it's something that everyone in this cohort thinks about constantly, right? Everyone has a different priority. Everyone has a different perspective. They have a different vision for what it is. And how do you harness that? The thesis of sovereign engineering is like, you got to come together. You have to come in person. And I think that's something that Gigi, who is one of the people that runs the whole sovereign engineering program, like, I think he kept trying to instill the principles of the structure of the program, the structure of the almost structureless sovereign program. And he really drove that home, which was so funny for me personally, because I have for 5 years been fighting not going back into the office. And I quit my job and I was like, I'm out of here. Bye, America. I'm going to Europe for 6 weeks. And what did I do? I commuted with my husband into town and sat in a co-working space with a bunch of people, you know, for 5-6 weeks. But it's very different when it is with purpose. And I think it's not every day, right? It creates the sense of urgency to really take advantage of the people that are around you, to really respect the time of the people around you. I mean, it's a very, like, noble mission to not only host this program, but to really foster that discipline of, yes, we all live around the world. We all have different dreams for how we want to live our lives. And the whole point of Bitcoin is that we're sovereign, right? But we have to figure out how we can stay connected so that we can learn what everyone else is doing and actually be a global community that is that will lead a global movement. Because as I've learned, I mean, you know it, but we are just so early. One of the things that I decided, I think the last day of the program, I was like, I'm not talking about Nostra anymore with anyone when we talk about Next Block. It is too big of an idea. We don't even know how to explain it. If the question leads to Nostra, I will explain what Nostra is. But yeah, I mean, I think when I made that declaration, you were like, yeah, nobody is like, let me tell you about the HTTP protocol. No one has ever said that phrase to me. So why on earth am I doing that to people who really know as much as I did a few years ago about, I don't even know what to call this, back-end engineering? Like, I don't even know what it's called. So it's like, yeah, when someone wants to talk to me about it and I'm going into like these technical details, it's just impossible. So, you know, there's a lot of challenges of communication, yada, 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 with the normies. But if you are in this space, I think it's worth it. I think a year ago, if you had asked me, like, traveling for work, which this is what essentially it is. We work for Nostra and we've traveled for work. I would say, no, you can do it at home. You don't need to upend your whole life for a month and go somewhere else. But maybe you do. Maybe it's what we're going to need for the next 10 years to really make Nostra work.
Let's get into it.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back. Get an M-Pub. And just start with that.
So I don't want to lead with AI because I remember, I don't know, a year or two ago when everything was AI and any app you had all of a sudden had an AI assistant. I was like rolling my eyes at it. I was like, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this. But now's the time to pay attention to it because it works so much better than it did before. Would you agree? Would you agree that maybe if you were someone that gave AI a shot a year ago or even 6 months ago, the quality of it likely turning you off is fair, but you need to jump back into it now?
I mean, it depends on which AI you're talking about, right? So one of the big things with AI is that there were different approaches that were being taken before that were kind of leading to dead ends, and that's why they weren't good. I don't know how long ago you tried AI, but the new ones that seem to be doing well are called LLMs, large language models. And so those are better, like definitely better. And they're so better that like now they're starting to bifurcate into specialized versions. And I think, you know, the AI you've been using versus the AI I've been using while we're here are very different in their purposes, but they're both like purpose built to the task that they're doing. And so for me, using it to code, definitely helpful. For you, using it to like put together a lot of the business stuff and the documentation for the business, definitely helpful. But some people are still like probably not going to get a big benefit out of it if you don't have like a very specific use case that's been tackled and conquered by some company or some, you know, college kid who's at least like, I'm going to solve cooking AI, right? Like, I don't know if that exists yet.
Ah, fair enough. I see what you're saying. Yeah. I think the really juicy part of what we've experienced is how much AI can make it possible for capable people, smart, creative, capable people to take an idea and produce something that would have required VC funding.
Yes. AI, in my opinion, has definitely closed the gap on needing to raise money for a lot of, you know, like, it's a good idea, but we need to like do some research or we need to get like a team together to put some concept together to see if it's viable. I think you can do that with AI now.
Yeah. I'll be very frank, honest, transparent. I've never worked in the advertising industry. And there were parts of the business that I was mentally avoiding because it was not my expertise. It was not my wheelhouse. I didn't have many people that I could reach out to and talk to without burdening them, you know, with a lot of questions. And someone said it in the program, but it's using it as a tool for thought is so helpful. If you have an idea, but you don't have the confidence or conviction built enough to, you know, get the work started. So if you say, oh, I have this idea for this app, we could do, you know, we could sell bananas directly to monkeys. Okay. How would that even work? You could ask the AI agent Ian is laughing too hard. Do you like the idea?
I'm just picturing that.
Decentralized technology, maybe directly to the monkeys.
I'm just picturing that pitch.
The monkey's going to be like, I could just go up there and get my own banana. Yeah. But the app is so good, they'd rather use that to go get their own bananas. But okay, I don't know much about monkeys. I definitely don't know much about banana trees. I could just research it. I could pitch the idea. I could have it review that idea under different personas. So I could say, hey, can you look up the Chiquita banana brand and act as its, CFO and tell me what are their biggest pain points and, how could I go in and disrupt their market? I don't know what will come out of that, but you can literally just play around with like crazy ideas like that. And before, I think, I know that, the AI agents that I was testing out could not give me anything helpful. But what I was able to learn as I was producing, standard stuff that a company needs, the website, the web pages that explain different things for different audiences, the documentation that someone would expect to be able to download if they wanted more information, the terms of service, the privacy policy, even the About Us page. Those are things that I had not explicitly done before for a private company. And I would have possibly botched the job, or we would have had to pay someone to do it, to draft it from scratch, or we would have had to just pay a company, right, to spin it up, right? That's what other people do, right? If they have an app idea and they need to take it to market. Mm-hmm. Whereas for me, I was able to just sit down and either I knew what I had to do and I was just asking it to do it, or I had to take a step back and say, like, please act as an expert in this and explain to me what I need to know if I want to do that. Please tell me the common pitfalls that people have when they're trying to do this. Please tell me what I am overestimating or underestimating about this. Please tell me where I'm wrong. Please tell me where if we launch, this could fail. And I actually did that last one over and over and over again. I had the AI agent take on different personas of people that I thought would love NextBlock, people that I thought would hate it, people that won't understand it, people who might be our competitors. And I just wanted to see, like, what am I missing? What is it from this industry that I actually haven't worked in before that I need to understand when it comes to what their pain points are, the language that they speak, all of those things. And I mean, I'm sure like you had possibly similar experiences on the coding side with the AI agent and how you were learning to use it. But I ultimately came to the realization that I was talking to the AI agent the same way I would talk to my coworkers and people who worked for me on Microsoft Teams chat. That's what I felt like. I was just talking to someone I work with. Either they work for me and I'm tasking them, or they are someone that they're like a colleague and I need to say, hey, you're the director of marketing for the company we work at. We need to do XYZ. What do I need to know? Can you pull this for us? Can you do this? Can you update that? Talking it to it that way made me realize that, oh, I can have a whole workforce in front of me that understands every part of our business, every documentation product that I'm producing with this AI agent, it knows. And so it's almost like you have a staff of 10 by yourself. And so what does that mean when there are people that are trying to build Freedom Tech projects and they possibly have no budget? They're trying to create open source code. They're trying to push it out. They're trying to educate people so that they can use it. They can build on it. They can explore the use cases. And no way is that going to be the skill set of people who are trying to build the foundational technology for Noster. But the AI agent can do that for you. It can take you to the point where you've done as much as you can, and then you can hand it over to someone that you need to pay, right? So produce terms of service, produce a privacy policy that is word for word how you believe your business should work, then give it to a lawyer and say, hey, is this legal? What am I missing? What should I be worried about? Instead of going to a lawyer, explaining your business, they produce something and you kind of have to just say like, I guess that's right. You're the expert. It's like, no, you're the expert. You're in charge. You just need to make it clear enough so that you can ultimately delegate something to a human being. But I think that the fear that people have or the hesitancy, you've really got to drop it. Like, I felt maybe like I was not in the know, but I didn't feel like I was behind. But after these past 6 weeks, and I feel like I got an accelerated like graduate degree in AI prompting. And now I'm just like, everyone else needs to catch up. You need to just start playing with it. You need to learn how to talk to it. It'll change your life.
Yeah. So I think you're in the like extreme hype stage right now. I think it's done some things for you and you are seeing the possibilities. And I don't want to be like the anti-AI guy after everything you just said, but I think that one of the things that AI can do specifically for the Freedom Tech community is make it more professional looking,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's not so much that like everybody needs to start using it, but the people that are pretty much outnumbered need to use it to mm-hmm. level the playing field, right? And so, you know, Bitcoiners didn't have AI when they were growing Bitcoin. And obviously, Bitcoin is what it is today. And I don't think anyone questions that it exists and that it's real. They might question if it's as valuable as the world has said it is. But when it comes to a lot of other freedom tech like Noster, Tor, PGP and these other programs that have existed for a while, they've always had like this level of like, it never looked like 100% professional. It always felt like this is like someone's side of desk thing. And that's because that it is, right? Like even if you're doing something full time, if it's not paying you, you can only do so much. And so what AI does is it really stretches your budget, right? So where you would have had to pay a human $2,000 for maybe, you know, a month or two worth of work, with $2,000 in AI, you can get a year's worth of work out of AI. And only when you can't get the AI to do the thing you do, do you offload it to a human. And so, you know, from watching you use it in particular, yes, we are a two-person company. There are some other people involved that are helping us like with information and stuff like that. But fundamentally, it's just you and me until we eventually hire a person. But watching you use AI and watching me use AI, I just feel like it'll probably push out a little bit further before we actually need to hire someone. But we can still look like we're a team of, you know, let's say 10 venture-backed people, right? You know, if you go raise $1 million from a VC, you could hire like 5 people for like half a year, maybe 7 or 8 months, maybe a year, depending on what you're paying them and where they work. But if they're in the States, like you're probably getting a year max. But if you had $1 million from a VC and it was just 2 people with AI, I mean, that might be the only money you need to take down until you bring in revenue, until you can start paying yourself. And that's what I saw happening for us was like, oh, if we learn how to use this, the numbers that we need to hit for this to like make sense for us drop dramatically. And so for me, that's the like, it may not be for everyone, but everyone needs to use it and get acquainted with it and see if the math starts working out for you and see if it actually does give you a competitive advantage. Especially if you're going into a field, like you said, like advertising, like I know some of that stuff because of other companies that I've worked at, but it's definitely on a case by case basis. I don't think it's for everyone right now.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. For it to look polished makes such a difference. And it's so easy to think, well, it's so easy to say, well, we can deal with that later. This is the MVP, the minimal viable product. We just need to get something out. But first impressions really matter and people are very busy. And so I felt so much pressure for us to get something out that, you know, as we say, normies would understand. And it would be something that they it would feel familiar. It would feel like a very similar experience that they're having with VC-backed applications and websites so that they feel comfortable and safe and they move forward. Versus if it is something that a developer just spun up and they want other developers to look at, other developers will respect it, right? They'll look at it and they'll be like, I just want to see the tech. But everyone else is like, this needs to look nice. So it's a huge barrier to entry, I think, to actually have people test your technology that I think you can easily overcome now. One of the parts of creating an app. I don't know if you've ever created an app. There's so much that you have to do that I've never thought about. I've actually developed a system before, but not one that would be just an app that people pull up on their phones and they're clicking through.
I just want to chime in there. Like, I think the language of like creating an app, or I have an app, or like there's an app for that, right? I think that's like Silicon Valley marketing language, right? One of the things that I was talking about the other night, the last night with one of the guys here, where he finally was like, oh, like, I'm actually bullish on this now, right? Like, I won
cool
this guy
said
over.
The word bullish. Yeah. I was like, that's so sweet.
But he was like a, not a detractor, but he had a lot of questions and comments about what we're doing and how we're trying to do it. And I've been talking to him, you know, every week and just slowly like answering his questions. But literally on the last night was when he was like, oh, like if that's what you're doing, then yeah, that'll probably work. And what I had to explain to him is that it's not the app. It's a business. Mm-hmm. It's the business that's going to work. The app is just one of the things that the business needs to do. But the business that we're creating, it already works. We know it works. Google does it. Facebook does it. They all do it. We're just doing it with different technology. And so I think the app language throws people off because they immediately start looking at like, how am I going to defeat the app? Mm-hmm. How are people going to defeat the app? How are people going to hack the app? How are people going to take advantage of the app? And technology you can take advantage of. But from a business standpoint, a business would say, if we're losing our shirt, we're going to stop.
So yeah, we'll turn it off.
Right. So it's like, what do you mean? But that language, like app versus business, I think that's like an outcropping of Silicon Valley, where they were a bunch of VCs just funding companies, and they were just saying, they have an app, this is an app, this is an app, this is an app. And none of them had business models, right?
Very true.
So they were just pitching the idea that I have an app. They were never pitching the business model because none of them had one. They never ever explained how this is going to last for 4, 5, 6, 7 years. It was just use flippity flop or glip gloop or whatever. And it's like, okay, what happens?
It'll disrupt this market and then we'll figure it out.
And it's like, no, you're going to pump $50 million into it and you're going to cripple somebody's successful business by undercutting them. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't work forever. And we see that now with Uber. Uber is the prime example. They undercut the taxi business with an app that was losing money on every ride. And then when all the taxi drivers are out of business, we get back to the real prices, plus like 10 or 15% because it's Uber's got to make their Silicon Valley tax, right? So I just want to like jump in there because that's another thing that I've kind of learned from talking to specifically engineers who are always focused on the tech and the app of it all. And I just was trying very hard to not bring up the business of it all because I'm like, this isn't a business program. This is an engineering program. But when I start talking about the business, that's when everyone's like, oh, well, yeah, that'll work.
It's just ads. Ads works.
Yeah. So that's a learning that I've had from being here.
Very fair. But I was actually talking about building an app because one of the things you have to do when you build an app is figure out how you want people to move within it and how to onboard them onto that process. Yes. But very fair point, babe. How to onboard them onto the process of logging on, explaining to them how to use it, how to have fun within the app, check different information. And I thought I knew what I was doing, but when I really stepped into it and I thought about the different perspectives and how to really show off how cool it is to have a place where you can buy and sell your attention, I suddenly got so overwhelmed and I had to take a step back and I really had to think it through how every piece connects and what people would want to do and see. And it was able to screen for screen help me design the entire app, meaning what text is on the screen, what buttons are there, where they go, if there's a little tooltip that you could press that could give you more information. And I just remember turning to Ian and saying, how do other people do this? This is so much work. My brain is fried and I'm really smart. If you guys haven't noticed, I'm a very smart person. I am. I think I am an exceptionally smart person and I was able to nail this down. Really just me checking in with my CTO, Ian, once in a while to get this done. But I truly was like, I don't understand how other apps exist because this is so much work. And he said, VC money. They pay someone $30,000 to do this, a team of people who do this for a living. And they'll produce this and they'll get this all done for you.
It's not even that, though. It's VC money pays an actual person to work for you for 2 years. And they're iterating on it. You got to launch an MVP. Mm-hmm. It goes out. People complain. They click the wrong buttons or whatever. And then you got to reiterate on the UI, UX, and you take all this feedback or whatever. And those people are fundamentally good at their jobs, but they're usually fixing something, right? That's why it's the UX is bad and we need to make it better versus what you've started with is, in theory, the AI has taken years of UI UX experience and walked you through that process.
I mean, here's hoping we'll learn soon, right?
What I've seen, yeah. It did.
Like, oh, you're impressed.
No, I mean, like, this is what I'm saying is, like, for what I watched you do with it, yeah, if you're a person that doesn't know anything about UI UX, it can 100% help you. Like 100%. Absolutely. I watched it teach you what you needed to know.
Yes. And I think the really important point there is when you have someone else, when you have a full task delegated to someone else or a team and you say, all right, you guys are in charge of the UX customer experience of this app. They give you something, you really give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, all right, you figured it out. I don't totally get that. I think that's missing there. They'll take care of it. But when you're working with AI, you know they keep making mistakes. I mean, you should. You should be very critical. You should be looking at all of it. And ultimately, it's your work until you hand it off to like a designer, developer, right, to finish it out. You should be paying attention to it at a level that you never would have if you had, you know, hired or contracted a supposed expert to produce that for you. And I think that alone is something that is going to improve the products or whatever you're doing as a small business, because we're a small business, right? It's going to improve that, I think, to a higher quality than a big company could produce, because it's your passion. It was your idea. It was your vision. And you are going to maintain that, the principles, your business model, everything, the ethos, and all of the things that you produce so much better than if you just hired someone. You would be lucky if that person also saw your vision and their brain worked the exact same way and they had the same principles and beliefs, but that's just not the case. It's never going to be the case. And so I think that is where, I want to say it behooves you. Now that I'm CEO, it behooves you to use the AI agent produce the directives that you have to task things out and to make them as clear and structured as possible so that it doesn't go off script and it becomes something that you didn't even want. Because if you do hand your project over to someone else, a huge piece of it, and they give you something back and you've paid them $30,000 to do it and you don't like it, what are you going to do? You're going to have to use it, or you delay launch, right?
Yeah. And this is another thing that I think the Freedom Tech community can really benefit from, which is it is a lot of passion. It is a lot of like ideological, like it has to be this way because mm-hmm. otherwise it's not Freedom Tech. And it's already a small community and it's already filled with people that are all working on their own thing. So it's very hard to like build a team of people. Like here, there's a project called Tollgate, right? And so Tollgate is, it's at least two guys that are here, but like, I think there's some more people mm-hmm. that are like helping around the world and they're lucky that they have a team that's like kind of working on it together. But for us and particularly me in the beginning, it's like, it was just me working on this idea and I had the passion. I wasn't using AI in 2024, right? So like, yeah. I was really just sitting on our couch thinking it out with you. And I'm just sitting here for 6 weeks using the AI to pull out like every thought that I had about it and then using that to translate it into either documentation or just ideating or I used some of your docs and I fed mm-hmm. them in to help write more documentation for the code, right? So like, again, for the Freedom Tech people in the world, like it will help you scale like the amount of things that you can do. And I think that once we scale, especially if it's like a 10x type of scaling, a lot of these like Freedom Tech projects that wouldn't have looked nice, but were probably very functional and valuable, kind of like Bitcoin mm-hmm. and the original Bitcoin wallets. Imagine if the first Bitcoin wallet looked like what you produced over the last 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Nobody would have questioned Bitcoin,
right?
But we had to deal with like Windows-based terminal things and like it looks like a Windows 95 program. And they're just like, but trust me, the Bitcoin's in the network. And everyone's like, I don't know, bro. That looks like a scam, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, presentation is very important. And so these guys here for Tollgate, like they've been using, I mean, they didn't really use AI to make the UI, but there was another guy here who helped them make the UI and he was using AI to help them, right?
And he's created a beautiful app with a beautiful interface. Like that was his expertise that he brought here. And the excitement that everyone had about what that would mean for the Tollgate protocol. I mean, it's
exactly.
Yeah, it's not that people don't want to make it nice.
Exactly.
It's just that
you're usually focused on building the thing.
Exactly. You want it to work. You want the technology to be revolutionary. And that is your skill set.
The AI can help you explain why your thing is important in a way that most engineers can't do.
Mm.
And usually for freedom tech, it's very important to be able to explain why it's important. Because once people understand why it's important, they're more likely to want to participate or help or in most cases donate to the cause, right? And so if you're just like, oh, obviously this is a good idea, it's like, yeah, to like everyone in that circle, but not to the whole world. The whole world, for example, Tollgate is like anonymous internet, for lack of a better term. Well, not the whole world, but a lot of people have internet. Why does it have to be anonymous? Like we already have the internet. Then you have to explain to them the whole problem of like how the internet not being anonymous is a problem. And if you're the one explaining it, it's like, you're probably not the best communicator.
Well, let's take that and talk about Blue Sky. Blue Sky has figured out how to explain what Nostr is to all of the people coming to Blue Sky and it's the app protocol, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I showed something to Ian. There's a new like TikTok alternative on Blue Sky. I think she is the developer. She posts a lot on TikTok. And the way that she describes everything she's doing is so good. And she got an investment from Mark Cuban. And so I told Ian, I was like, look, their app got an investment from Mark Cuban. After 2 months, they're launching, yada, yada, yada. Look how well she explains it. And Ian was like, yeah, because they paid people to tell her how to explain this. And I was like, oh, it doesn't even, in my mind, I just assume, wow, that person's really good at explaining it.
But also, even if that's not the case,
right?
Even if that's not the case, maybe she is the best communicator in the world. And she literally sat down and off the cuff explained it like that first take.
Mm-hmm.
If you have investment money, that means you can pay other people to do the things that you're not doing while you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what VC money is. It frees you to do the things that fundamentally you think are most important for you to do and the VCs think are most important mm-hmm. for you to do. But if you don't have VC money, you still have to explain what you're doing. Like you always have to explain. And so the AI can be the alternative to VC money. And which is funny because they're the ones that invested in it.
Oh, maybe that's the title of the episode.
What?
AI is your alternative to VC money.
Yeah. I mean, like one of the guys here, he was doing a demo one day and we weren't using. So we've all been using this. It's a coding environment. It's called Cursor. And we were using Cursor this entire time. And he was like, well, the thing that I'm going to show doesn't really work in Cursor. So we have to use this other thing. And when you use the other thing, you see the actual costs of like firing off these AI requests, because Cursor is like a, just trust me, bro, I'm VC funded and I'm basically subsidizing you using AI.
Mm.
But when you're paying for API keys and you see the costs, these things start to add up, 5 cents, 4 cents, 10 cents, right? And so he was like, yeah, it ran for like an hour and spent like
$20. Wow.
So you can spend a decent amount of money on using AI, but even if it churns for an hour or however long it does and you burn $20, $50 and it was all worthless, it's still valuable because you would not have been able to do that, right? Like you would not have been able to do all the work that AI did to give you back a bad answer. So even a bad outcome from AI, you can go, well, that's not right. Don't do that again. The AI goes, okay. And then you try again. And so you burn another $20. Maybe you burn another $20, but you will not spend a year's salary of an employee until before you get to the right answer. And so that's where, like, when I started like seeing people using it and I saw all the stuff that they were showing, I was like, wow, your first employee should be like a $5,000 computer with all these models on it. Like, if you're serious, right? And I think this is, like, in my head, what we're going to do for Next Block is we're going to get a really beefy computer where we can put all these AI models on it. And that's going to be our, like, corporate orchestrator. And every time we do something, like we produce some documentation or we produce a video or anything, we give it to it as context. Like, this is what the company's doing. And so anytime it answers a question after that, it can pull in all these other things as context. It will always have all the context.
And what's so exciting about that, or exciting for me specifically, is because NextBlock is such a big idea. The attention marketplace and this protocol that Ian is about to put out as open source code for the attention marketplace, it's such a big idea. And depending on the time of day, Ian and I are excited about a different part of it. We have like a 5 to 10 year roadmap already planned out for NextBlock. And where can we store all of that so that whenever we are working on something, all of that is kept in mind? This is the way. Because yeah. I personally, I mean, I don't know if you can tell, I have anxiety issues. As most people do, but like I get very anxious and overwhelmed when there's a lot to do. And knowing how much we have to get done was so overwhelming for me. But when I started working with the agent and I walked through and I said, well, like, I want to get this accomplished, it actually just kept saying, well, remember, this is the thing that we're trying to get accomplished. We can do those things later. It would bring stuff up, but it would be like, we can do those things later. Mentally, for me, to know that someone else, even if it's a robot, it's not a robot, right? Language learning model, whatever. I'm gonna call it a robot. For them to worry about it so that I don't have to, like, ooh, what a load off that is on my mind. It lets me focus. It lets me pay attention to the task at hand. It gives me confidence that those ideas aren't getting lost. It's just really exciting. I think truly, if you are worried about what AI is going to do to your job or the job market, don't. Figure out what you want to do, the problems that you want to solve, and play around with it, and truly, you know, figure out how you can make your own money. You don't have to start a small business. You can figure out a side hustle. I mean, there's so many opportunities that are out there that you can explore. You can design a business model having those conversations with an AI agent. It's, you know, my mind is blown. And I think Ian at one point was like, man, imagine if we had all of this before we had gone to Amsterdam and launched NextBlock. And it's like, you know, we didn't, but wow, we would have been able to articulate our idea so much more clearly. But I think since we had those challenges and hurdles and struggles up until this point, I think that's why it felt like such a release. Once you and I realize, like, oh, this is how we're going to do this. This is how we can keep this small. This is how we can stay true to what we want to do. You know, specifically when it comes to our business model, we are not charging much to host ads. We're charging much less than other platforms will to show ads. And so how do we genuinely keep costs low? How can we honestly say we do not want to be a tech giant? This is actually how.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back, get an M-Pub, and just start with that.
All right, so you can't talk about AI without talking about vibe coding.
Oh, so now we're getting into the coding side of AI.
Just vibe coding.
Oh, just vibe coding.
Can you explain what vibe coding is?
No, but I will try. yeah, so vibe coding is basically, now that these AIs are pretty good at writing code, people are trying to have the AI create an app for them from like a single prompt or a series of prompts without ever touching the keyboard. If the AI gets something wrong, you say that's bad, it'll undo it and you try to go a different way. But the goal is basically like you're just talking out loud about what you want to exist in the world.
Like, I want an app that can sell bananas directly to monkeys.
Yeah. And and funny enough, the AI could probably produce a data model for that. Mm-hmm. It could probably produce an interface for that. It could probably produce a lot of things for it. It would be ridiculous, but the AI could probably one-shot that. Vibe coding is something that is getting people that had kind of just, I would say, been burnt out on programming, excited about it again. Because a lot of us who have been doing this for a while, myself, you know, 20 years, we're more about like, I just want to get something done. And we don't really have time to like be exploratory or creative. We just want the best framework. We want the best language. We want the best cloud provider. Like we just want the best, simplest things because we know these things get big and complicated. And I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time debugging stuff using something that I don't understand.
And it's not worth customizing because a lot of these functionalities that you need are common. And it's like a tried and true thing. And maybe you haven't written it before, but someone else has, and you just don't want to learn it. You don't want to have to sit and learn how to code that functionality just because your app needs it.
Sure. And so vibe coding kind of lets you not have to worry about any of that. You could say, I want an app that sells monkeys bananas directly to monkeys. You don't have to specify a language. You don't have to specify anything. The AI is just going to make some decisions for you. And that's fun up until a point, which is what I think vibe coding starts to get a bad rep, is because, you know, there was a guy that posted on Twitter, I think while we were here, or at least I saw the post while we were here, where it was like, all right, guys, it's over. You know, like AI coding is going to take over. Like I just vibe coded a business model and da 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 da. And then like a month later, he posted again and was like, all right, nothing works. It's all broken. I don't know how to fix it. Like, I don't know what to do, right? It was like the same guy talking about what he had created. And so I think that's where vibe coding is getting a bad rep, is that because you weren't involved, because you didn't write the code, because you didn't truly understand what it was doing, it looked like it worked, but there might have been a ton of exploits in there that someone took advantage of. There might have been, especially if there's money involved, like people are going to try to take advantage of you. And so if you don't understand what's being done, vibe coding can be fun, but I wouldn't just like be shipping code into production and running businesses on something that I vibe coded. But I do think that it gives very experienced people joy back in programming.
Mm.
Like I think, especially for myself, and I know a lot of other people that I've been trying to get them to like look at the stuff that I'm seeing here. It's like, look, I know we like to have fun, but work has always made it very hard for us to have fun with our random ideas. And now, if you set this up right, you can kind of one-shot an idea. And that's what one of the guys here, two of the guys here actually have kind of put together. I forget what the other one was called, but one is called the Vibe Line.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they set up a thing where you basically talk into a microphone, it records what you say, like to the file system on your phone. They have that tied into a program called Sync Thing, which synchronizes kind of like Dropbox, right? So it synchronizes that recording to his server. On his server, something picks it up, translates it, determines the context of what they were saying, and tries to, if it hears the keyword of, and I have an idea for an app or something like that, if it hears that keyword, it tries to create a prompt for an AI that can write code that will pretty much one-shot your idea, like in a single prompt, create what I just said. And the more context you give it about like what you want it to do or how it should look, like it'll add that to the prompt. None of thing was 100%, but I saw a couple things kind of work.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And all I see when I see something like that is, Jesus, like what's the next, do that, like work on that for a year. And what do you actually have? You start to have like some Tony Stark Jarvis kind of system where it's like, you don't have to sit down and create it. You just have to tell it what it did was right or wrong.
And it's so funny because Alexa and Siri have primed us for that.
Alexa and Siri are bullshit compared to what we're seeing now.
Well, absolutely. But hey, Siri, what's the weather today? You know, that is.
But that's told. The speaking out into the world. Yes.
Yes. That's what I'm talking about. And expecting something back that like, you know, answers your question or materializes what you've requested.
Yeah. But the problem, like I said, like those two things and even Google's assistant, all the assistants, right? They were trash because someone had to sit down and program in what to do when you hear all those things. Where we're at now is, you know, for example, weather, right? Hey Siri, what's the weather, right? Okay, cool. That is a thing you could do. Or today you could basically say, create me a weather app.
Mm-hmm.
Very different thing.
That's what I need.
But like, this is my point.
I'm gonna vibe code that.
Okay. Well, if and when we get that beefy computer that I'm talking about, we can put the vibe line on that. But the point is that like we're at the point now where not everybody, but definitely capable people and also some very, you know, meticulous, willing to try things and fail people will be able to create apps that they don't even have to put in the app stores just for themselves. Like I have a problem and I need it solved and I don't want to go shopping around the internet for like a possible solution. Like, can you do this for me? And I think that's where this gets really exciting because that means now that people will be able to create hundreds or thousands of versions of an app for themselves before we ever see it. And they might've been using it for a year or two before we ever see it.
And I just thought about, a very common app that a lot of women use, which is just a period tracker. It's important to track it. And you want some type of calculation that just telling you where you are in your cycle. If you are really on top of it, you know the type of food that you should be eating depending on the week phase that you're in and you know how you should be taking care of yourself, how much activity you should be having. Like, it's just what women go through in their monthly cycle. There's just so much information that you have if you know where you are in it. But all of that data is being shared with governments right now. As crazy as that is, right? It's being because of reproductive rights. And I have friends who were like, what the hell am I supposed to do? And I have my hack. I'm not going to say it on the pod, but it was a legitimate concern that a lot of women had when they realized this is what, you know, this cute little pink app. You know, they're all a little pink. They have girl. It's a girly little app that you have on your phone that everyone tells you to download. Yeah, you could just make your own.
Yeah, but I'll do you one better, right? Specifically that case. Yeah. This is where I think a lot of this is going. And this is one of the things that I had never really thought about this. I think Gigi is a very smart person. And I had never thought about the concept of if your app doesn't work on the file system, it will fail at some point in the future. And I think you asked me like, what does that mean or something like that? But basically,
I was about to ask you again.
I know, but you asked me when he said it one time before. So basically like we have these apps, right? And I'll just use your cycle tracker as the example for this. You're entering data mm-hmm. into this app. Where is it going?
Yeah.
Well, you're saying it's going to the government. Okay. But before it goes to the government, it has to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And what he was advocating for was like, your apps need to write to the file system, not to a database, mm-hmm. not to AWS. It needs to create files that you can copy and paste somewhere else that you can not touch, but you can touch and you can move them around. And as long as your app, as long as those files exist, then you can build a million apps on top of those files. They're your files. Mm-hmm. But if you have an app that writes data, not onto your phone, but to some AWS cloud, they're not going to give you access to their database. They're not going to give you access to their cloud. You might never, that company might disappear and all your data is gone. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was really interesting because now you're talking about period tracking or, you know, cycle tracking really. And yeah, like if you created a recording, just every time you said something about, oh, I don't feel good, or I think mm-hmm. I need to do this, or I need to do that. And you just had a folder full of recordings that got transcribed and turned into text files, you don't have to ever read them again, but you could give that to an AI. You don't even need an app. It can just read all of them and say, oh, based on what you're saying today, from what you've said in the past, I think this.
Right.
And as long as you have those files, even if you just have the audio files, you don't even need the transcriptions. You can always transcribe them again. But those initial files that you created, they are extremely valuable to you. And you know, I long time ago, I used to say like Apple, the best trick they ever played, which kind of makes them sound like the devil, right? You know, the best trick the devil ever played was convincing everyone he didn't exist. The best trick Apple ever played was convincing everyone that the internet didn't exist because they convinced you that if there's not an app for mm-hmm. it, then like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And oh yeah, in the app store, you got to pay for apps. Mm-hmm. So basically you're paying for web pages, right? Like that's what Apple did. And they normalized that on Android. You can go into the file system. You can get an MP3 if you want to. I don't think you could do that on Apple in the early days. You might be able to do it today. But now with AI, it's like you don't even need that like application layer. You just need the text and give it to the AI, it will literally read it to you. It will talk to you. It will talk to you in whatever voice you want
right.
it to talk
like,
to.
I don't need some like fancy you interface. Don't. I can be like, hey, I'm cramping.
You don't.
Hey, you know, I have a headache. Hey, I've had two migraine all day. And not only could it store that information, but it could then tell me what to eat. It could tell me what vitamins to take. It could tell me what not to do, which is truthfully what I need to manage my life. Yeah. Specifically the cycle tracking. It was such a growing trend amongst women to really learn. And I think a year or so ago, you know, when reproductive rights became challenged in America, women just stopped doing that. And it was like, you know, and this was after, you know, I don't know, the past 100 years of them suppressing like Eastern medicine and having us be in touch with ourselves. So I think it's exciting that technology could bring it back around so that we could, you know, have ability to store information about ourselves in a really like low effort way and have that come back to us and, you know, to help us improve our health, help us improve what's happening with us without this fear that, oh, this is my medical data that someone else could take and use against me.
Yeah. I mean, the best way to describe this, and I know that a lot of companies like Microsoft and Apple are saying these things, and I just don't think that they are the ones that are going to do it. But fundamentally, I feel like AI is going to actually create the personal computer. Like, that's what's going to happen. And what I saw here the past 6 weeks, specifically with the Vibe line, I think that, and this other thing, 10X, he called it 10X. Mm-hmm. It's like a AI powered project management software. Well, it's not really software, but like project management tool.
Yeah.
Vibe line in that, I really see a world where like you have a very powerful computer that eventually will get cheaper and smaller over time that just has an AI model or two on it. You don't need Windows. Mm-hmm. You don't need app. You don't need these desktop system. You don't need these operating systems like this anymore.
And then imagine what you would actually be using AI for, because I think most people who are knowledgeable are afraid to put too much in there.
Well, I mean, again, if you're afraid, you're going to be afraid of whatever exists, right? What I'm saying is that right now we use computers to make files. That is what we do with computers. We're always making files, or we're pulling someone else's files. A web page is a file, mm-hmm. right? It's just moving files around. But we need these applications to make those files useful. And most of the time, we're just trying to glean information, or we're trying to glean someone's analysis out of it. Like if you watch a YouTube video, right? You're always just trying to get information out of these files. But with AI, you don't need to now like search around and say, oh, which commentator do I want to listen to for their analysis? Just give me the same things they read and have the thing that I have the most context with tell it to me. It knows how I'll take it in, or I'll, you know, it, because we've been interacting. That's a personal computer. Computers up until now have not been personal. Mm-hmm. They've been, you know, for lack of a better term, like communism computers, right? It's like we have to create these programs that serve everyone. And because they serve everyone, they serve no one. But with personal computers, we at NextBlock, I'm deciding on air right now, whatever. We are going to have a computer that has all the context of the NextBlock company. Obviously, we have to protect that and all that fun stuff. But like fundamentally, that is a personal computer. That is our context. That is our competitive advantage, is the data that we create. And what we choose to share is what we think has no competitive advantage. But every other piece of data that we produce, we put it into our AI that we control. And when we ask it a question, it answers our questions to the best of its ability based on what it knows about us, not by asking Google. And that's where this is heading. But to get there, things like Vibeline are going to have to be definitely like worked on more. But personal computers without AI are not personal computers. They're communism computers, or they're some type of like collective computers.
Communism computers. You heard it here first.
Well, I just like hear a lot of people have used the word communism in very different settings. And I just realized that it just means shared, right? As they're just saying, it's like a shared resource, right? And so all of our computers are fundamentally a shared resource right now. Like,
yeah.
You're using AWS, I'm using AWS. Mm-hmm. You're using Grok, I'm using Grok. Your Grok is going to give you the same answer that my Grok is. There's no distinction. It's just shared computing. But a personal computer would be like, Mondana's computer says this and Ian's computer says this.
All right, babe, you sold me. Let's get this $5,000 computer for next block.
Well, we're not. Eventually.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back. Get an M-Pub. And just start with that.
It's time for Satoshi for your thoughts. Ian Reese.
Wow, the full government name.
You are now a graduate participant.
I feel completer like I graduated
of
something.
Yeah, of the fourth cohort of the Sovereign Engineering Program. Do you feel now like a sovereign engineer?
I feel like I know what needs to be done to build something that is completely sovereign, for sure.
Really, completely.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're not doing that at Next Block per se, because of some of the things that the business needs to do, but. Assuming that we wanted to build Next Block without Strike and all that stuff, and we could figure out a way to prove someone watched a video without, you know, all those things. I feel like the missing piece was Cashew. I've seen enough use of it. I understand what it is. I understand how that's like, there's probably one more layer on top of that that I can't really see, but it's definitely like something else. But Cashew like totally changes the game. And everything else, you know, that I saw here is just kind of built on that, right? Like assuming that I can pay you directly, which is the value prop of Bitcoin, but the blockchain mechanism of Bitcoin makes it very hard for me to pay you small amounts directly, right? So in a weird way, Bitcoin has like the same problem that we have now with payments, where it's like, I want to pay you a penny, can't pay you a penny on the blockchain, right? So then they created Lightning. It was like, oh, you can move, you know, millisats. You can move a fraction of a Satoshi. Okay, cool. But like, I still have to have a route from my Lightning node to your Lightning node. So if we don't have a route, I still can't pay you. But now with Cashew, the route doesn't matter. I give you a string of text and that's it. And as long as you're willing to accept that string of text and you can prove that there's money tied to it, then the route was me to you. And that last step, I think, is what people think Lightning is, but it's not. But Cashew and eCash is. And so with eCash, yeah, we can totally build sovereign things, sovereign businesses. For example, things like Tollgate. For example, some other things that were built here. But most importantly, not most importantly, but for us, how we're going to probably use it first is when you say sovereign engineering, right? How do you be sovereign? How are you sovereign? I've completely extracted our application from AWS. Like we can run I've built Nextblock on AWS and I've also in 6 weeks basically rewritten it all off of AWS. And so that was like a really interesting experience for me. I had these systems and I knew how to run them on AWS, but watching people build and run their stuff here really showed me like, okay, like, yeah, that is the sovereign way to do it. But with Cashew specifically, one of the things that we're going to be able to do is, you know, every I say this not in the pejorative way, but like every platform has an API, right? And so like, for example, Twitter has an API. And usually, well, Twitter doesn't charge, but I guess they do charge. Usually people charge to use their API. Well, with Cashew, you can actually set it up where your API is basically public. You don't have to do like access tokens or sign up or anything like that. You basically make a request. And the request has a payment. And if you don't pay, you just don't get a response. And so because it's just a string of text that basically contains the money, you can include money in the request for the data. And so what we're going to do, you know, eventually, is all of the things that I was running on Amazon are going to be basically running on what's called DVMCP. And DVMCP, as I've learned here, is basically the like decentralized compute platform that Ethereum,
right? You had mentioned this,
is like marketing itself as, mm-hmm. right? So a little backstory real quick. When I first got into Bitcoin or when I was first getting exposed to it, one of my former coworkers, Claire, she was like, she asked me directly, like, what do you think, Bitcoin or Ethereum? And I looked at them both, you know, whatever. And I basically said, well, I think Ethereum has like a very interesting use case, which is, it could be this like decentralized compute for the planet. And the money, Ethereum, is just how you pay to execute your functions or whatever. That was a very naive answer. I didn't really understand what I was saying at the time in hindsight, but the idea of that, many people have tried. And that's what Solana is. That's what all these like crypto blockchains are, is like there's this compute platform and you use our currency to run your programs on our system. But with Noster and DVMCP, the money that you use to pay has been decoupled from the network. So one of the guys here, he's built in Lightning payments already for DVMCP requests. And I'm sure he's working on Cashew next, right? Mm-hmm. So Lightning being through Zaps, right? So now if you're a person that's building an application and is using DVMCP and Noster and all these things, and you put your compute in the DVMCP instead of inside of Amazon, then you can instantly monetize every single piece of functionality that you write. You could even just charge one sat. But if you charge one sat and someone gives you 1,000 sats, that's 1,000 sats you wouldn't have gotten if you were running it inside of Amazon. I've only pulled 2 functions out so far, but I've pulled 2 functions literally out of Amazon, put them inside of DVMCP, and the application works the same. Now, where it's being executed and all of that stuff is different, but because I've been working with AWS and Lambda for so long, when it finally clicked in my head that that's what I was dealing with is just a decentralized version of that, I literally was like, oh, I can just migrate all of this. And so as we build out NextBlock and I build out these functions inside of DVMCP, the minute we have any type of traction and people want our data, all we have to do is put a price on calling that function and we get paid. And to do that with like Amazon would be very difficult because you'd have to create an account for them and you'd have to create credits or something. Like you'd have to charge them. Like you'd have to create this like credit system for them to be able to use your stuff. And whereas with this, it's like, no, they give you a string of text. The string of text has some money associated with it. You check it. It's good. Cool. Here you go. No account, no nothing. You don't even really care who made the request. You could obviously whitelist people or blacklist people, but fundamentally, like that's where everything's going to go. And I think that it'll help businesses and non-businesses, right? You can just write like a cool function that does something funny and people might be willing to pay you a couple sats to like, you know, execute it and give you something funny back.
Well, that's, you know, the technology side of being a sovereign engineer, but do you feel more sovereign than before? Like, you know, what kind of impact did this program have for you when you're seeing other people who have been living this reality for, you know, longer than you have?
I mean, I've always known it was possible. It's cool to see it in action and actually like meet and, you know, touch real people that are doing it. Because no one in my circle is doing it. You can't really do that living in Washington, D.C. It's one of the most expensive places to live on the planet. So yeah, it's hard to see something that's kind of impossible where you are. But at the same time, I think what everyone is working on, like it'd be really hard to be a sovereign engineer if you weren't working on Bitcoin, if you weren't working on Noster, if you weren't working on Cashew, if you weren't working with these technologies, because almost every other technology is like you're working for someone, right? Like if you're using Ethereum, you're probably working for a company. You're using Solana, you're probably working for a company, right? Like these crypto projects, you're probably working for a company. But these
means
guys
are working for a VC.
I mean, whatever. Like you're not sovereign. And the guys that I've met here, like they could just stop everything they're doing tomorrow and just be like, I'm done, whatever. I'm going to work on something else. And that's really cool.
The thing that I loved was every Friday we would have demo days and, you know, someone would just get up and be like, yeah, so I was thinking it would be cool if something could work like this. So I made it. And then they like demo it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But that was just such a new, that was just so new for me. I couldn't imagine like, oh, you could do whatever you wanted this week and you had an idea and you played it out. Which again, going back to, you know, general conversation that we've been having today is AI makes that so much easier than before. But just to see people that have lived in that reality for so long of no restrictions, and I'm going to let my mind think this thing through and actually produce something it's powerful because it makes you less scared of trying. It makes you more curious. It makes you more innovative. It's wonderful. I think the Sovereign Engineering Program is like truly a once in a lifetime opportunity, even though it's happened four times. But, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners are actually developers, but if you have an opportunity to go to something like this or to collaborate directly with other engineers, but even if you're not in engineering and you are just trying to, you know, test out new ideas, like you're not going to find people like you where you are. I think these type of people are very, very rare.
Yes.
Right? Like Bitcoiners are rare. There's more Bitcoiners than ever before because it's just the adoption is happening, right? But Nostr is new as ever. But I talked to people in the program about this who agreed when I said it. Like thought I knew what Nostr was. I don't know what Nostr is anymore. I'm excited to learn and see what it becomes. But like to be able to cleanly define Nostr in a few sentences, if you think you can do that, you don't know what Nostr is because it's so much bigger than any of us really understand. It's so many things. And we're right at the beginning. We're so early. And if you have any idea for how to grow it, like come pick an AI agent and get to work.
Yeah. And I want to call out one thing. One of our listeners, Gene, he left a comment on the last episode that was like, Nostr's great, but it's not bigger or whatever. It's you know, Bitcoin is bigger. Bitcoin's more important. I don't know, man. Like, I hear what you're saying, and I don't know if you're a developer, but the things that I'm seeing built on Nostr, like, in a week, it would take Bitcoin years of arguing to even be able to attempt some of these things. And because of the more decentralized nature of Nostr than Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin is decentralized, but it's also very centralized in that you can't change the protocol without everyone agreeing.
Mm.
But with Nostr, it's like the opposite. You can just add to the protocol without asking any permission.
It's permissionless.
And so because of that, we're seeing a lot more experimentation. We're seeing a lot more exploration, and we're seeing a lot more people just taking chances. And all they need to do is like fire an event off to a relay. And now there's this whole other application that can exist because someone just created a new packet of data. Like, that is very special. And I'm not saying that Bitcoin is not important or that it's not a big thing, but this type of experimentation on the internet, it's special, man. And really pay attention to what's coming out of things like Sovereign Engineering, because it's only going to increase. Like, once these people, including ourselves, get their feet under them and understand, like, okay, this is like how you churn stuff out, adding AI onto that, like the amount of exploration and creativity that's going to blossom on Nostr is going to outstrip what we've seen on Bitcoin. I will bet on that.
I agree. I said last year, Nostr adoption is going to grow Bitcoin adoption, not the other way around.
But is all possible because of Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
So they are intertwined. But it was a good comment, Gene. He's a longtime listener. I wanted to acknowledge his
yeah, we love you, Gene. I think it's impossible to really understand what you just said unless you came to the Sovereign Engineering
and
program.
That's the most important
part. So yeah, I mean, I think you might feel it in this conversation, the excitement to try to convey what we've learned. But I think it's all going to have to play out. But I think if you have any hope for freedom tech solving major problems that we are all facing around the world, like, believe in us when we tell you that feeling of hope is legitimate because it's coming.
Already here, it's just not equally distributed.
The future is very bright.
Get the power back. Get the freedom back. Get an M pub. And just start with that.